This podcast is brought to you by Local Silver Mint in Ware, New Hampshire. For the best selection of silver and gold, visit the Local Silver Mint showroom in tax-free New Hampshire today. Online at localsilvermint.com.
Sugar, spice, and everything nice. These were the ingredients chosen to create
The Grace Curley Show. Radio, TV, print, Grace Curley does it all.
She sings, she dances, she acts.
I'm waiting by the door for my Pulitzer.
She sounds hideous.
She's just the worst.
Yeah, she's a wacko.
She is the devil. I'm in hell.
Now, here's the millennial with the mic.
She still leaves me both breathless and speechless.
I love her. I love her.
She is the best.
Somebody will ask you to say Grace.
Grace Curley.
Grace!
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. It is Thursday, June 4th, and there's a major update in a story that a lot of us have been following, and that is the curious case, the vile case of Michael Proctor and his text messages. This new batch of text messages covers a lot of ground, goes back to 2013, is full of really obscene, disgusting, racist, homophobic, misogynistic, you name it, he's got it. And it's back and forth with the former Canton Police Sergeant Sean Good, who resigned while an investigation into his behavior was pending. Joining us now to break down this story is the Young Jerks' Mike Crawford. Before we kind of hand it over to Mike and let him break down some of these texts, I do want to issue a little disclaimer or a warning of sorts to people who are in the car with their kids. If you're in the car with young kids and you don't want them to hear this stuff, I don't blame you. I would turn off the radio if I were you. That's not usually something I do, Taylors, tell people to turn off the show. But this stuff is pretty graphic, so just keep that in mind before we go forward. Now, joining us, that's quite the introduction there, is Michael Crawford from the Young Jerks. Michael, first give me your reaction to this new batch of text messages. Did any of them stand out to you in particular?
Oh, this is horrific. I mean, we've seen a lot of bad texts from Michael Proctor in the Karen Reed trial, but this batch was even worse. And I just, a lot of what you said, obviously, but just the way that they talked about their girlfriends, yeah, and kind of the rapey stuff, and the racial profiling, like, you know, telling them not to hurry because the person's a black person in a car accident, like, you know, the first responders not to. I mean, that is the stuff that just, I can't even believe it. It's beyond words. I cannot believe that they typed this out in text. This is just, everybody is just, the phones are lighting up today. Everybody's calling me. It's just, nobody can believe it. And people have been watching this for a couple of years, and this is like the most shocking set of text I've ever seen. And it's tough to talk about it on YouTube or radio, because what do you say? If you repeat what he says, FCC, this is really bad. That's how bad it is. It's really even hard to talk about.
Yeah, and something you just said really strikes me. You said that they would write this out, because that's the part of it that I think a lot of us have a hard time understanding. It's hard for us to imagine even having these thoughts, you know, even having these thoughts that are so antithetical to being an even semi-decent person, is to think, oh, don't rush to the scene because this person has a certain skin color, so you don't need to save them, let them die. That's not a thought that most people have. But to have the thought and then to go to your phone to open up the message, like, it takes, there's a series of steps there, Mike, that you have to go through, and then to press send is the part that I think leaves a lot of us mouth agape as we read these messages.
Yeah, I mean, anybody in the normal world is not, especially in a professional position working for the state or the town of Canton, is not praising Hitler. These guys, they praised Hitler in text. I mean, that Proctor is literally praising Hitler. I mean, you can't make this up. It's just, and going after Robert Kraft about being Jewish. I mean, it's just on and on and on. We could be here all day talking about the things that they said. It was just so horrific. And it's, I gotta, like, feel bad for the family members of these police officers, the wife, the kids. And yeah, it's got to be a tough weekend for Michael Proctor, because Monday morning he's going to be deposed by Karen Reed's attorney. So what a week, you know, for him, a weekend. And then Monday morning, well, you're going to be facing the music again on Monday morning.
Yeah, this is Michael Proctor. You just brought up the Hitler comment. America sucks, .. Hitler was really onto something. Then the bleeping U.S. had to step in and ruin it. That was the comment about Hitler. And you mentioned Bob Kraft. He said, this is Sean Good, actually. New England's Patriot owner Robert Kraft, I'm assuming he just wrote Kraft, is a terrible C-word Jew. That was Sean Good. Anne Frank's a lying C-word. That was Sean Good. And so it's, you know, you're looking at both of these guys, Michael Crawford. You're looking at Sean Good. You're looking at Michael Proctor. And obviously we know Michael Proctor more because of the two trials. I would say leaning more heavily towards the first trial, where he was really one of the main events of that trial. Sean Good, not so much, but he's carrying his weight when it comes to awful messages. Like, it's not like it's not like Michael Proctor sending them and Sean Good's kind of just giving it the thumbs up. We saw a lot of that in the first trial, where he would send things into these group chats and some things would be ha-ha'd, or they would be thumbs. They'd put in text reactions. That's not what's happening here with this former Canton police sergeant. He is actively part of this and writing back his own disgusting comments.
Yeah, definitely. And if you're a taxpayer in Canton, you have to be very concerned. They were trying to move beyond all of this lately. You know, they've had a bunch of elections. They've got a new police chief. But at the same time, look at this stuff that came up. And it didn't come up in the Canton police audit. Like, it's hard to move on when you have new bombshells like this. And this is just going to become a bigger and bigger issue in upcoming elections, I think, with the DA's race. I think there's a forum tonight for the DA's race, if I'm right, in Canton. So I think that's going to come up. I think Juna Perkins and Adam Deich and some of the other candidates who aren't Connor are going to be bringing this up a lot. And I think Canton, it's going to be really hard for them to get beyond this when there's new bombshell disclosures like this. And they need to rip the Band-Aid off. They really need to look into all their officers and make sure this stuff gets out there as quickly as possible. So it's not just years and years of this for them.
Well, you just brought up Canton, and I think it is worth noting, and Taylor talked about this a little bit when we started the show today, and they write this actually in the filing. It says, and despite the CBD had received, and despite that, CBD had received, reviewed, verified, and analyzed these same messages nearly a year ago, the Canton Police Department. Sergeant Good remained employed with full rank as a sworn police officer by the Canton Police Department until 2 days ago. My question, and you might not have the answer to this, Mike, but I'm curious if there's been any talk of it, is what's going to happen with this guy's pension? What's going to happen as far as, you know, his retirement goes? I know he resigned right as they were kind of holding this investigation, but I have to imagine there are going to be some sort of consequences. As you said, the taxpayers in Canton must be outraged.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's been no talk of that. So everything with the town is top secret. I had heard something was going to come out, and then it did. But that's the only way. We hear the whispers, you know, and it's wild to just not know if they're going to continue to pay this guy's pension and where they really are on the disciplinary and the investigation of him, because it's been all, you know, top secret. And I think a lot of it is due to the union and also potential lawsuits. I think the town obviously is protecting themselves, because this guy probably will try to sue them if he does lose his pension. So it's a delicate balance for them. But I think public disclosure, the citizens need to know what's going on. They want to know, and they have a right to know. So hopefully much more info comes out so people know what's actually happening there.
Yeah, one of the reasons I found this shocking, it's not because we don't know how gross Michael Proctor is. Like, we all figure that out pretty quickly with the first Karen Reed trial and some of the comments about Blue Knot and some of the comments about, you know, finding nude messages or nude photos. I thought, though, at the time that he had a particular hate for Karen Reed, like a real dislike for her. because maybe the John O'Keefe cop element of it, he alluded to that in the 2020 interview that, you know, that's why he was so angry and he reacted in a bad way. But what these messages to me really showcase are that this is just a vile person who has hatred for all sorts of groups, Asians, Jews, Black people, women. There doesn't really seem to be anyone who's not involved in his when he's spewing his hatred.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's probably self-hating too. Like, if you're that hateful, you hate yourself. You hate everybody, and that's the problem here. We have obviously police officers, public servants that are negative. They hate. That's all it is. And I'm glad you brought that up. That is such a good point because that was the excuse. That's what we were all kind of feeling with Proctor. Is this is about John and Karen? He hates Karen because of John, right? But this guy hated everybody.
Yeah.
He's an equal opportunity. There's not anybody he didn't hate. He was cheering for Hitler. I mean, that says it all. I mean, and he's in a community with a lot of Jewish, you know. That's the thing. Proctor, there isn't, you know, Proctor in Canton, obviously, is a big Irish community there, Irish Catholic. But there's also a Jewish community in Canton, and especially some of the neighboring towns in that area where he's from.
Yes.
So it's pretty shocking.
Yeah, that's a great point. You're right. Canton does have a pretty big Jewish community. That's a really good point. One other thing I wanted to bring up, and we've talked about this, Mike, before, but I think today is really an important day to discuss it, is the other cases that Michael Proctor was involved in. You mentioned his comments about Black people. He referred to Black people frequently as the N-word or other variations of that. Some of them I never heard of before. I need to look them up. I don't recommend other people looking up any of this. And then, as you mentioned, telling other, I think it was other officers or saying something along the lines of, you don't have to send people out because, you know, let them die, or, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but it was something along those lines. And now we have cases where he was the lead investigator and they do involve people of color. They do involve Black men, in particular, this case that you and I have talked about, the Myles King case. And so does this put this case, I know it puts it into jeopardy, but how likely is it that in these cases, certain people who did commit crimes are going to get off because of just how corrupt and repugnant Michael Proctor is?
Definitely. I suppose it depends on the evidence they have outside of him, because anything that he touches is going to be tainted, I believe, in the jury's eyes. And definitely with Myles King, he's got a great attorney, Rosemary, and she wanted all of this out. She was one of the people pushing to get all of this info out with Karen Reed, to support Karen Reed on it. So I know that she knows that it's helpful for her client. So we'll see what happens with Myles King and Michael Proctor, definitely, in some other cases. There is another case, actually. So there are, I'm sure, several cases this will come up.
Yeah, and one last question I have for you, Mike. I remember Michael Proctor's wife standing by him, and I don't remember her being overly vocal during the Karen Reed trial, but I know a lot of people in his circle kind of stepped up and had his back as he was going through this. You mentioned the rapier, or the more, you know, sexually inappropriate comments. I wanted to read part of it. He's talking about his girlfriend, and he says, "I try every effort possible." He's trying to get her to engage in a sex act that she did. I'm assuming she didn't want to do. I wait till she's asleep. I'm not going to read the next part. And then he says, "I try every effort possible. I try to get her hammered." Not going to read the next part. "It's starting to piss me off. It's not cool." Do you think we're going to hear from any of the women in Michael Proctor's life now that this second batch has been released?
It makes you wonder. It makes you wonder if she's still with him, and what she's thinking reading this too, especially for her kids, her future. I wouldn't doubt it. I would not doubt if eventually you do hear from her, because she took a lot of heat, you know, because she did become kind of a lightning rod in some respects with some of the back and forth between the Free Karen Reed people and her. And I think it was unfortunate in some respects on both sides.
Was it mostly on social media?
Yeah, I think there were phone calls to workplaces and things like that going back and forth. And just unfortunate, you know, people get too carried away. And I think sometimes the victims, some of these folks became victims in a way. And, you know, she, but, you know, I don't want to praise her too much because I feel like she did back her man all the way on this. But I would not be surprised to see her take a turn on this and realize, who have I been married to? Who is the father of my kids? Can you believe he's saying these things about her, it seems like? So that would be interesting. I would not be surprised.
Michael Crawford from The Young Jerks. Everyone follow him at The Young Jerks on social media and on YouTube. Thank you for your time, sir. I appreciate it. And we will be right back.
Watch the show live. Rumble.com/The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone. Today's poll question is brought to you by Local Silver Mint, located in Ware, New Hampshire. Silver Dave will work with you directly, so contact him at localsilvermint.com. Taylor, what do we got for the poll question today, and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is, are you shocked by Michael Proctor's and Sean Good's newly revealed texts in Karen Reed's civil suit?
Yes. Yes, I am. I knew he was a scumbag. I thought some of the animus was directed at Karen Reed because of the John O'Keefe element. Like, he's a cop and he was upset by it. I'm not saying it was an excuse. I'm not saying it was an excuse at all. But I could kind of... It made more sense that it was like, oh, this woman he hates in particular. And that's why he's saying all these nasty things. I didn't realize that. As Michael Crawford pointed out, he's just full of hate. Like, from top to bottom, he is full of hate. He hates all different groups. Asians, gays, women, men, blacks, whites. He doesn't care. He hates Jews. How could I forget? He really hates Jews. And so, yeah, I was a little bit gobsmacked, Taylor, by just the sheer amount of N-words and C-words. I knew he liked the C-word. I wasn't so aware of how much he used the N-word. Of really descriptive ways of wanting people to suffer. That part of it, Taylor mentioned an insect crawling up a woman's privates and hatching eggs there. There were just a lot of things that... It wasn't just slurs. It was like the sentences that he was constructing and sending out to this Sean Good. And Sean Good was awful as well. So yes, all's to say, I was taken aback.
72% say no, they're about what I expected.
I don't think those people have read all of them.
No. And I was telling Howie this earlier. I mean, this is stuff to say after you've had maybe four or five straight whiskeys, but to write it down and not think twice about hitting the send button.
And I have to imagine
I want to be clear, not that I would say about four or five whiskeys in.
No, you wouldn't. I think most people, Taylor, because that's something you learn as you get older, is like, what do they say? In vino is veritas. Like, there is truth in liquor and people say things.
Right.
And there are also people who get wasted and
drunk
they just laugh.
Speak sober thoughts.
You know, there are people who get wasted and they laugh and they give people hugs and they fall asleep on the couch. Like, I'm not saying any of it's good. You shouldn't be drinking and, you know, to excess. But there are people who drink a ton and fall asleep, have too many Bud Lights and fall asleep on the couch and, you know, maybe call their ex-girlfriend and say, I miss you. I don't think a lot of people do this. They drink a ton and then they start saying anything. Like, this is so beyond the average person's worst moment. And like you said, he's writing all that stuff out, and I think he's doing most of it while he's sober. So this is really, like, well thought out. Okay, I'm going to send this now. You have to go through several different steps before you press send. And the people who are saying, no, I'm not shocked by this. This tracks for him. You haven't read this stuff. Because if you read it, I can't read 99% of it on the air. It's bad. It's really, really bad. It would make Graham Plattner blush. When we come back, Graham Pollard from Maine Wire.
The Grace Curley Show is on the air.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show, and thank you for joining us. We've been bouncing around a little bit today, and we did talk about Graham Pollard. Graham Platner earlier and now joining us.
See, it can happen to anyone.
This is going to get real confusing.
Graham Platner, Patner.
Pollard. We got Graham Pollard joining us from the Maine Wire. The good Graham, as I think we're starting to call him. And this, I'm going to mess this up now more times than I care to admit just because of the names. But Graham, thank you so much for coming on. He's the digital media editor at the Maine Wire. And the Maine Wire has really been the main hub for people to check out the latest news on Graham Platner. He is a nightmare for the Democrats, and he has been for a long time. But the most recent addition to his long list of scandals is this Kick platform and his messages there. Graham, what do we know about this platform, and what do we know about Graham's activity on it? How recent was the activity? How many women was he messaging? Give us some details on this.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on, Grace. And that is the bane of my existence, the Graham Pollard versus the Graham Platner phenomenon here. He kind of is stealing my turf as the Graham in Maine politics. But with this Kick scandal, so it has been reported between 6 and 12 different women that he messaged. The original story said a dozen women after he was married to his wife, and then the campaign kind of went and corrected it and said, no, guys, it's all good. It was only 6 women, not a dozen, that he was messaging. But the kind of problematic thing is one, his profile picture. If you haven't seen it on social media, it's him in a towel, shirtless, with his...
Oh, I've seen... Graham, I wish I could say I haven't seen it. I've seen it. It's been burned into my brain. It was, we actually compared it to the Geraldo Rivera picture from now, I think, decades ago of him. It's a shower selfie type thing. It is horrible.
Yeah, creepy. And there's also a photo that we put out like 8 months ago from one of those, you know, the Facebook pages where it's like, are we dating the same woman or are we dating the same guy? There's this small Asian guy who's taken like a couple's photo with Graham Platner. And this was in 2024 after he was married. And he basically posted before Graham Platner was running, I went on a date with this guy. It seems like he might be talking to other women. Does anyone know him? And then some of the ladies in the comments were like, oh, I went to high school with this guy. He was bullying me. So there's definitely a dating app trail linked in this guy. But with Kick in specific, it's really like best case scenario, kind of the last bar open at 4 a.m. type of dating platforms. Like that's
where you
go when you're having that's best case scenario. So like if you're striking out on Tinder or Bumble, you fire up the Kick chat. But worst case scenario, and what a lot of people are speculating, is that it's really known as the predator's paradise. There's a lot of underage texting that goes on there. And we have a reporter at the Maine Wire, Seamus Opot, who does a lot of our crime reporting. And he said, like, as soon as he heard this, the only reason he had heard of Kick is because of all the crime reporting stories he'd done on there involving, pedophilic behavior, predator behavior. So a lot of questions on that. And up until a couple of days ago, the account was still active. So it's unclear from the account if he was actively using it or we haven't seen any of the messages he was sending. But the account had not been deleted as of a couple of days ago.
Yeah, and now a lot of these Democrat politicians are being asked. Some of them have supported Graham, so it makes perfect sense that they would give a statement now to clarify if they still stand by him. Think Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders. And a few of them have commented on it. And then other Democrats like AOC and some media correspondents are pretending that they really don't know anything about him. They haven't waded into this primary, and they're essentially playing the dumb card. Like, oh, I really, the Mickey the Dunce, I don't really know a lot about this guy. Now, as far as he's concerned, he's putting out memos now. His campaign came out with a new statement. Tell me about this. He's touting the fundraising. The Maine Wire has this story. He's touting an internal poll, and he's maintaining that he is the lead over Collins. Do you think this is coming from a place of confidence or a place of panic after that meeting with Democrats in D.C. on Tuesday?
Oh, it's definitely a place of panic, no doubt about it. That type of memo you put out there is not a memo you put out if things are going well. And that internal poll showed him in the lead, but it was a significantly lower poll than some of the independent polls that had come out just a week prior. So, and Susan Collins is also notorious for underperforming on polls. So really, that was not a very good poll for Platner, even though it was an internal poll. And I think it's important to kind of examine this trip to D.C. because he had the meeting with the senators, which he was in and out of, did not look happy, did not take questions from the press. And he was supposed to go to a couple different elite, swanky D.C. fundraisers after that. I've heard mixed reports on if he went to one of them with Ron Klain, Biden's former chief of staff, but it seems pretty unequivocal. He skipped the second one with Vote Vets, which is a veterans organization that supports Democrat candidates. And the excuse he put out where there was a media swarm at his mom's restaurant was the reason he had to bail on that and go home. I mean, if you believe that, I have an oyster farm in Sullivan, Maine to sell you, because one New York Post reporter going to his mom's oyster farm is not a reason to bail on a fundraiser you're going to raise, you know, $250,000 at. So we have heard, our sources have told us, told Manwire editor-in-chief Steve Robinson, that after the meeting with Democratic senators, he became aware of another shoe to drop, another bombshell to drop, and that's why he skedaddled back home as DEFCON 1 to get the whole team together and figure out exactly what they're going to do and the damage control they're going to be working when the story drops.
Yeah, and one of the things he said, because now we're getting, you know, more details about this meeting, and it's, you know, people who were there telling the Wall Street Journal some of the things that were said. And this was one of the quotes, and this really got me scratching my head, Graham. It says, he told people, it's not a secret. This is what he told the senators. It's not a secret. I've had a messy, complicated life. The worst of the rumors we've all heard are not true. That is a very strange phrase because, as you know, the worst rumor you've heard may be vastly different than the worst rumor I've heard about this guy. Do you, in your mind right now, when you look at all the things we know about Graham Plattner, is there one rumor that you've heard about him that maybe you can't say on the air, but that comes to mind when you think the worst rumor I've heard about this guy?
Yes. Yes, there is. We've been hearing rumors and rumblings for about a month now on a larger shoe to drop that would be significantly, significantly more damaging than anything that's come out about this guy so far. Worse than the Nazi tattoo, worse than the kick. So I believe I do know what he's talking about, and I'm pretty sure what he's done today is he's leaking it out to people on his campaign or people that are his supporters, because I've started to see some of these left-wing commentators or people on his campaign trying to get ahead of the story and discredit the story before it's already out, vaguely, without giving any like specific details. But I guess I can say a little bit because they've been starting to do that. So just keep an eye out for the New York Times, because they've been hinting that the New York Times is cooking something that could be pretty devastating for him.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay, everyone. So make sure you keep an eye out for that. I had said that. Oh, Taylor, did you say that on the air, or did you just say it into my ear?
I just said that into your ear, but
I thought you just said it, so I was like, go ahead.
Because I'm like yelling at my radio with the speakers here. What might this be about?
I think Graham is trying to keep us from getting into trouble.
I know without getting into specifics, but is there, like, which, is it more Nazi-ish, or is it more kick-ish, or is it something even?
That's a really, you know what, that's a perfect way to ask the question, Graham. Is it more Nazi-ish, or is it more kick-ish?
It is more kickish.
Okay.
Let me say a not so subtle hint about what this is. A lot of people in Maine have criticized Susan Collins for her vote to support Brett Kavanaugh, and I think there's going to be some awkward parallels for Graham Plattner going forward.
Okay. Okay. I think that's vague enough, and I think that's okay. Hey, Graham. Since the Maine Wire has been doing so much. So much reporting on the fraud in Maine, a lot of it coming through Medicaid and a lot of it having to do with the Somali community. They have been one of, you know, there are other groups, but the Somali diaspora in Maine has been a huge part of the fraud that we've been seeing. I did want to ask you to respond to this clip. Yesterday in Ohio, they're having these very intense press conferences about the fraud there, and there was a hearing on Capitol Hill about this. I wanted to play a cut here. This is Representative Brandon Gill, and he's asking the state senator there, Nikki Antonio, if Somali immigration has been good for Iowa. Take a listen to this clip. This is Cut 11.
Senator Antonio, thank you for being here. Has Somali immigration been good for Ohio?
You know, that's really outside of my purview of
You're a state senator. Would you like to see more immigration from Somalia?
Well, as far as I'm processing your question, and I have to say that I was almost brought to tears just now.
72% of Somali immigrants are on welfare.
Because the rate and the level of hateful rhetoric based on false information
at an astounding rate, and
shocking,
I think most Ohioans
is shocking
have a problem
to me.
With that.
The lack of even humanity to group a group of
to
people
allow your
together.
Own state to be defrauded
I am
at
shocked.
Astounding
I am
rates.
Shocked
billions
and
of dollars
by
taken
the
out of the pockets of
right
working
now.
Class people
I
going
am
to
shocked.
Criminal fraudsters. I certainly have
every,
a major problem
in every
with that.
Community, there are good people and there
Americans
are bad people.
In a regular order,
good
but to try to
understand
say
we're not supposed to disrespect
that
every single member
out of,
time,
of a group
we're not is
we're
somehow
out of time.
A criminal
over here.
Is shocking to me. I am shocked
we're
and appalled.
Already out of time here.
Yeah, she's shocked and appalled. That's obviously, as I mentioned, that's in Ohio. But the main wire broke news months ago that a Somali American received tens of millions of dollars from Maine's Medicaid program while publicly claiming to bankroll militia in Somalia. So this is an issue, Graham, despite the attempts from left-wing activists and members of the Democrat Party to dismiss anyone with concerns of it of being a bigot.
It's a huge issue in Maine. It's an issue that is going to expand more and more. What you're talking about is Gateway Community Services in Maine. They're kind of the Taj Mahal of Medicaid fraud, I would say, but it goes really deeper than that. And kind of while we're talking about it, it's sort of adjacent. We had there's in Lewiston, Maine, which is really the where the most of the Somali population is clustered. There's been a huge surge recently in youth gun violence. It's really terrible story. It's kids shooting kids. And just this last weekend, there was five youths that were charged with gun violence, charged with attempted murder. And we hosted a community forum last night to try to just bring people to the table. And all the Somali community leaders were just actively going on Facebook, going on social media, urging every member of the community not to attend the event, calling us, you know, calling it a hate event, which was outrageous. I think that kind of says a lot about the where we are with that whole situation. If they're so worried about us exposing the fraud that they're going to actively boycott an event that was really not political in nature aimed at ending youth gun violence. It's a really sad state of affairs. And I think people in Maine are fed up with their taxpayer dollars being stolen from them like that.
Yeah, well said. Graham Pollard from the Maine Wire, thank you so much for joining us, sir. Keep it up. I know that you guys have been questioning Graham Plattner. You've been holding his feet to the fire, and you've also been doing a great job, as I just mentioned, when it comes to the fraud that is plaguing your state. We will keep an eye on all of this. Thank you for joining us. When we come back, I got a couple last cuts that I really want to play, including DHS Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen. He was mad because he thought Representative, soon to be ex-Representative Al Green, called him a racist. I think Al Green screaming at him to shut up is even more offensive. We'll talk about it when we come back.
More of the Grace Curley Show up next. This is the Grace Curley Show.
A woke new bill erases the term mother and father from state child custody and parental laws in New York. A gender-neutral rewriting that's expected to spark a flood of similarly clunky legislation. This is from the New York Post. It says mother would be replaced with gestating parent, while father becomes... Care to guess, Taylor?
Gestating parent and father becomes ejaculating parent?
What? God, Taylor, jeez.
What? Is what you have better?
Non-gestating parent, you weirdo.
Okay, I don't know. I'm thinking opposites.
paternity proceedings
contributions
to determine a child's biological father would meanwhile become parentage cases under the bill, which was rammed through the Assembly in March and of the Senate this week. I think this is going to be a bigger story as the days go on, because this is just another example of how wonky New York has become. And Hochul is, I think she's trying her best not to jump on board with this, because she knows it's going to get blowback. We shall see. The other thing I wanted to do here is I wanted to play a cut from DHS Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen, because I wasn't sure about him when he replaced Kristi Noem. The only thing I really knew him from was his really contentious back and forth with the Teamster guy, whose name I'm blanking on right now.
Sean.
I know it's Sean.
Penn.
Sean.
O'Malley.
Sean O'Brien?
O'Brien.
And that's why I had my reservations about him, because whenever I see a hothead versus another hothead, I assume you're both hotheads and I don't really want anything to do with you. I have to say I've been very impressed with him thus far. He's been doing a good job. They seem to be working very quietly at ICE right now to get things done. And when they feel the need to hit back at these far left deranged activists, they do. But they're not, it's not nearly as loud as what Kristi Noem was doing, which I think works for what they're trying to do, which is extract terrible criminals from our streets. But he had this interaction. He was on Capitol Hill yesterday, and he had this interaction with Al Green. Now, keep in mind, Representative Al Green just lost his reelection. He lost to Christian Menefee because of the redistricting in Texas. So he has his own reasons for being crabby. But this was a very, very sad state of affairs here. This is cut eight.
A racist, Mr. Secretary, would do what happened to Ruby.
Are you calling me a racist?
A racist.
I'm asking a question.
Reclaiming my time, asking to shut up.
That's a pretty.
Shut up. It's my time.
Excuse I'm not going to let anybody call me a racist, Chairman.
I never called him a racist. It's my time.
Yeah, it is. Gentlemen, will suspend.
He will
gentlemen
not. Suspend.
Tell him to shut up.
It'll gentlemen suspend. No, the gentleman will suspend.
No one will call me a racist. I'm Cherokee, too. My family has been pretty tall.
I ask that my time be restored. I ask that my time be restored.
The clock has been stopped since I suspended the clock.
I will continue to interrupt as long as someone's
yes,
there assuming
I agree.
They're calling me a racist.
And as I said before.
I don't think, being called a racist now as a conservative, it means nothing. The word has completely lost its meaning, because anything you say, if you like to exercise, you're a racist. If you disagree with them on this or that, or if you don't like this movie, you're a racist. There's a million reasons to be called a racist. But having a grown man tell another grown man in Congress on Capitol Hill to shut up in such a dismissive, hateful way is really jarring to me. Shut up in my house, Taylor, was not allowed. That was I would say that was almost as bad as a curse word. If you told anyone, if I told my siblings to shut up, ooh, man, I was in trouble. It's like the highest form of disrespect. And to say it to the DHS secretary, I understand you're mad you lost, Al Green, but move along. Howie Carr, coming up next.
They are what they are. They don't define me as a person.